Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of Subspace Communique's Life After Trek. I'm Chris, also known as Captain Pike from Subspace Comms. In this podcast miniseries, we're featuring former Star Trek cast and crew in an informal conversational format. Tonight, we're very pleased to feature noted Star Trek author, editor, archivist, consultant, and producer Larry Nemechek. Larry has been working behind the scenes of Trekdom for many years, and we're pleased to get a real inside baseball view of our favorite sci-fi series. Larry joins us via Skype, expect a couple problems here and there with audio quality. In fact, we actually lost our conversation with Larry about halfway through and had to call him back. I ended up leaving that in the episode because I thought it was kind of funny. I had a kind of funny interaction there. So I hope we enjoy it, and sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Tonight, we're pleased to introduce our special guest. He's a Trek author, interviewer, archivist, editor, commentator, producer, event wrangler, and all-around awesome guy. We'd like to welcome Larry Nemechek to the show. Hey, Larry, thanks for joining us.
I'm exhausted already. Wow.
Yeah, it's really cool that you could join us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me. This is great. And congrats for getting a podcast. I keep meaning to dabble with podcasts. I just haven't done it yet, but congrats for getting it going.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's something we've been wanting to do for a while, and just finally pulled the trigger on it. It was kind of happenstance, and I don't know if many people out there listening know this, but we planned on interviewing Manu Interame from Voyager for the site, and then I had the idea of, you know, possibly getting podcast gear together and just kind of doing it as an experiment to see how well it would go. And he was a great interview, and we got the show together and had a pretty good reception for it. So this is actually episode 2. You're on episode 2.
Okay. Well, so, I'll try harder.
Yeah. So, but you know, it's just something we kind of put together, and hopefully people are digging it, but we're sure digging doing it, talking to you guys. It's pretty rad. So
it is.
Yeah. So I think tonight we're just going to go ahead and start with your current projects. I know you're doing a lot with your blog, treklandblog.com.
I've kind of been on a summer hiatus. I only did a couple posts in the last month. Part of this is awful real world behind the scenes. I've actually got to upgrade my computer. I upgraded and got a digital, finally, after a couple of years, got a nice digital camera video. And then I realized I outgrew my my old Mac G5. So I've got to get a new one here in the next week or two. So I've got a backlog of video built up. But so I'm looking forward to getting kind of having my own fall new season here, like the TV Nets are doing, and getting on with that. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. We look forward to that because, you know, I've actually seen a lot of your stuff on treklandblog.com, especially, you know, the interviews you've done. I liked the one with Jeffrey Combs where you were in Johnny Carson Park in Burbank. That was good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was anything ironic in Johnny Carson. We just were trying to figure out a place here in Burbank to do it. And it was sunny. And we thought, oh, well, let's go to the park. And yeah, that was a lot of fun. Well, that was about his Edgar Allan Poe one-man show, which is phenomenal. And he was really, really trying to, I mean, it's still alive to do this. He's done it at several conferences as well as, legit theater places. I wish he could do it at a convention for people. He's done it at the annual Poe convention.
Yeah. Yeah. And, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. We actually have the opportunity to see him here in Austin. I don't know if people have read that on our site.
Oh.
Yeah. He's coming to Austin for Fantastic Fest. He's going to perform the Edgar Allan show, Edgar
Great.
Allan Poe one-man show.
Then everybody, you need to go see it. When he did it here in Hollywood, it was in the little bitty Steve Allen Theater, which is it's barely a theater. It's got, it's a theater and stage. It's almost like your grade school cafetorium kind of a thing without all the, with all the cafeteria ladies. But it was just phenomenal. He totally captured it. And he has a character in the audience that he refers to off and on. And I know halfway through the show, a few people sitting in front of us kept turning around trying to find her because they were convinced that she was there. But he really – there's a complete evolution to Poe. And, yeah, he does some from the rave. I mean, there's a couple of things you expect him to do, but it's not about – that's the conceit that he's come to do a reading. But it's late in his career, and, of course, he was a tragic figure just as a person. And no, but Jeff does any, and he actually, not to give it away too much, but he actually uses some prosthetics, some makeup prosthetics
right.
to help him with the nose. And even though it's a stage show and it's, you know, he'd have to do it every night. But it's, if you get the chance to go see it, go see it. And that's what we talk about. Of course, if you see the Trekland post, and the thing about the internet is, like I'm saying, this is a news flash. It's, you know, we do this a year ago and it's still up there. I mean,
right.
You know, yeah. That still dawns on me how you think, oh, this is going to be mushy and old. And well, no, because people do things and they're still out and you can go see them at different times. But anyway, the great thing about the Trekland post we did is that you not only get Jeff and talking about Edgar Allan Poe, but you get a little Floyd the Barber from Maybe.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we loved that. That was good stuff.
And I liked watching the interview because we didn't know about his other Masters of Horror work. And we finally got to see the, what was it?
It was the Black Cat.
Black Cat, that's right. And that was fabulous.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
And, you know, and the busy actors, I mean, I didn't know about that till he mentioned it. But then after he mentioned it, I wanted to, you know, give it a good plug and everything and lead people over to it. So there you go. It works.
That's a good reason to go to treklandblog.com, everyone. There's always good stuff. You know, also, Larry gives us a lot of behind the scenes stuff from his days, you know, working in Star Trek. One thing that I really liked, one of my favorite posts of yours, was your photo of, I think it was... It was the Romulan Ambassador shuttle from Deep Space Nine, Vreenak, right? I'm totally blanking.
From In the Pale Moonlight.
That's it. Yeah, In the Pale. My nerd cred just went straight out the door.
Ding! I heard it clear from here.
But yeah,
better than the county fair weight bell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, no, it's a photo of that shuttle, and a lot of people think that that's CGI, but that's actually a model. You have a picture with who's in the picture with the model?
It's probably Denny Herter, who was the grip, or he was the model handler over at Image G when they were doing that. See, the thing about that was the sixth season of DS9. Voyager had already been doing CGI, and Gary's every other episode colleague on DS9, which probably then was David Stipes. David worked both shows back and forth, but Gary Hutzel, who's now on all of Ron Moore's Galactica and Battlestar and Empire, Gary was the last holdout against doing CGI because he didn't think TV time quality budget issues were up to snuff to make CGI look as good as it could with movies. And he was the last holdout on doing models, not because he was a flat earther or anything, but because he didn't think they looked as good given what they had to deal with. Mm-hmm. And the last season of DS9, he finally said, okay, if we're going to do this, I'm not farming it out to, as was the custom then. And he's helped change, like on Galactica and Caprica, they're in-house pretty much. There's none of this, you know, sending out to a vendor, and all of their people are the ones who are actually making the creative day-to-day thing. I mean, you have notes, but it's not like they're not hands-on with it. He wanted to be, if he was going to do CGI, he wanted a system which basically predated what he wound up doing on Galactica when he got the chance. And the last season of DS9, they did that and experimented and went that way. But here, even the late eps of the sixth season, and I hate saying season six, that's such a DVD invention. In real life, we always said the sixth season, but it's clumsy for writing and notating. But anyway, late in the sixth season, they were still doing models. And it's just amazing that they built this fully detailed, that they paid for and built a fully detailed model like that. Because I don't think it was ever made into a CGI model like they did some of the older ships that they made CGI models for all the Dominion War shows. I mean, like Galaxy Class and Nebula and a lot of the aliens, you know, a lot of the Klingon and the, you know, old Bird of Prey and a lot of the Romulan, Cardassian, and Klingon ships that they made CGI models of for those CGI shows.
Right.
But I don't think that little Romulan scout ever did. And it's just a beautiful, for the model nerds, for the tech heads, it is a beautiful little model. I took several shots. The bottom line on all this is, on my site, I launched it, quote unquote, like 2 years ago, and I've never added any more to the pictures. I've had an assistant helping me this year get my files in order because I took shots for fact files for years and my own funsies and everything over the years. I've got about 5 or 6 shots of the Romulan shuttle, top, bottom, side, yada yada.
Oh, that's awesome.
That haven't been up, that originally were taken so the fact files CGI or whatever sketch artists could do that. And
that's awesome.
So I've got a ton of stuff. The famous, the one that I think will really make people's hearts pitter patter, although these, they keep creeping in from different sources, so it's not like this is original, but I've got a lot of the Kitbash fleet from different seasons in DS9 shots I took.
Oh, wow.
If I was at Image G and was doing something else and happened to look over and see, you know, the USS Trial, where it was the Reliant, but they like switched the decals around.
Right.
In the Time Hunter tradition of the Constellation on the original series, they just cut the decal around. Bunch of those. Or I would at least take, there were sometimes I just take notes. I wouldn't take pictures, but I'd take notes on what the names and the NCC numbers were. And I've got that stashed away. But anyway, I want to get all that crap out and all that stuff out.
We know what you
and
mean.
Get that out too. So yeah, so hopefully, and I teased somebody about that. I think I put one on Doug Drexler's blog one time, but I want to get some of the Kitbash fleet out from DS9 and that kind of thing. But if you go to my site right now, there's just, and it's been the same way for a year and a half. And that's one thing, after things are organized and slides are scanned, that I'll start adding to. So that's awesome. Coming down the road.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that for sure. Yeah. I also noticed that you had a redesign for treklandblog.com recently.
That was from the original. I had so many people over the years, the last 3 or 4 years, when I just thought of it as a business card on a website design and all this stuff. And a couple years ago, people that I'd worked with, and we all found ourselves with some extra time at one point, helping me get started finally. A lot of good-natured people, well-intentioned people would offer to help me over the years from all over the country. I meet at conventions. Oh, I'll do your website for you. I'll do that. And then either because of the distance or, you know, just people, if you're not paying people, even out of the goodness of their hearts, the paying stuff comes first.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It just languished. And then I had a chance, a really good friend of mine, we actually sat down and worked 4 or 5 weeks over it. And my original Trekland blog, which wasn't named Trekland at first, but it kind of was limping along without a name really, started off just, you know, off blogger and as in a certain vein. And then later on, when my a good friend of mine that actually I paid, but he helped me out with it, did the website. Then later on, we went back and matched the blog. Now matches the website. So
yeah, it looks great too. And that's actually coming from my professional opinion. I'm a graphic designer, web designer. So yeah, it's a really good design. They did a fantastic job. So
well, not that it's, I don't know how high tech it is, but I've had I had nothing to do with it, but I've had 1 million people ask me how I got the Twitter page customized with something. I don't know. It's like, I can't figure out how you did that. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I paid somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know I was, but I guess I did.
Yeah. I think Charity's going to take the next question for you.
Oh yeah. Actually, I was looking at your Facebook page and it looks like a couple months back, you spent some time at, was it Western Nevada College in Carson City, teaching diversity to kids? Was it using Star Trek as a model, huh?
Well, that was my friend Daryl Frazetti, who's now moved down here to LA, is in the middle of moving. He's trying not to have it be the move from hell, but it's working that way. And he's teaching at Channel Islands in Camarillo. No, they have a multicultural week every year. And this year he said, oh, we have to figure out a way, you know, quite and not as a cop out, I mean, a legitimate way. Mm-hmm. What better way to do on the in the kids area, especially to teach multiculturalism than using the Star Trek model where you've got multi-speciesism, I guess, or whatever. And so we came up with this real cute idea of, I got some basic makeup things. We got CVS licensing donated a couple of pairs of licensed Vulcan ears.
Awesome.
But then after that, I got, we did the hair bands and did some some pipe cleaner antenna for Andorians. I even had a white wig and the pig nose, like the Halloween animal noses you can get.
Uh-huh.
I got a couple of pig noses for Tellarites.
And that's perfect.
We did a ball cap and just drew a brown magic marker Klingon head ridge up and down the backside. and I did little stick-on kind of oversized Starfleet combat. If you were human, you had stick-on pointy sideburns and a stick-on whatever. And what I was really hoping for was 12, 13, 14-year-olds. And we wound up having kids like the parents that were all Trekkies or Trek fans or whatever would bring their like 6-year-olds on and 8-year-olds in. So we kind of like dipped it down. But basically the idea was we would role play and I would limit each species to like one sentence. Like the Klingons can be, you know, the Klingons can be mean but honorable or something. And, you know, Tellarites argue. And Andorians are pretty quiet, but watch out for them. You know, they're reasonable, but don't cross them. And the Vulcans, you know, are the ones that will not get excited or argue or, you know, they keep everybody else in line. But anyway, I had the basic thing like that. And then for 6 or 8 races, and the kids would come in and pick out what they wanted to do. And then I would throw out an idea and let them try to role play, you know, in the guy and let them role play as species. But instead of, you know, you take it as Star Trek's aliens getting along, and you know, it's the same thing of just a step above, as Gene tried to do anyway with the stories.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
You know, the races or the whatever cultures getting along on Earth, kind of a thing.
That's great.
And I think the main thing we wound up with for the younger kids was they're going to have the bicentennial of the Federation, and nobody can agree whose planet to have it on. So I kept it real simple, but it let them all kind of role play a little bit. And I think half the time it was more about the parents sitting there watching them than it was about the kids.
Sure.
But I, you know, that was the plan, and it's the kind of thing that it would be fun to do elsewhere. But it was a lot of fun, yeah. And the kids, some of them were a little too young for it, but the ones that were, you know, 10 and 12 really, really got into it. We had a lot of fun.
Awesome.
So that's the first time you've done that. You haven't.
Yeah, that was a Daryl had. That was my first dabble in academia. If you want to call it that.
Sure. Yeah. No, that's great. So a lot of people out there, I don't know if folks remember, they probably do. But Larry worked on the original StarTrek.com as a consultant from 96, right? That's when you started?
When it started, yeah. There for a minute, I thought you were going to say I worked on the original series. I was going to say, whoa.
Yeah.
No, Shani, I did not do that.
Feel free to correct me if I do make a mistake.
No, that was just funny. No, when my friend Guy Vardaman was the first kind of basically editor, and Mark Wade had worked at when the internet was new.
Right.
New is when the internet was young. they did the very first movie. Here's trivia for you guys. The very first movie website was for Generations.
No kidding.
Wow.
Well, that's appropriate. Huh. That's perfectly appropriate.
Yeah. And it was done at Paramount, had a little experimental thing before they were Viacom by then. There was a thing called Paramount Digital Kitchen up in Silicon Valley, and Mark Wade was part of that group. And then they brought them down within a couple years to set up what became when the internet, you know, shockwave fad hit all the studios at like 95, 96. And they came down, and they at the very last second, they were going to run off and do things with Mac and all the whatever the technology at the time was. At the very last second, they got a huge chunk of money in and partnered with Microsoft, and they were partnered up with MSN, and, you know, all the business models were different then. And the first year or two, it wound up being subscription, and Microsoft was going to do a all new thing to compete with HTML, of course, called I can't think of it, Nightbird or something. Anyway, at the last second, it fell through, and they had to bring everything back to HTML, and it was a real trial by fire. But from that, yeah, that first year or two, and especially when they went free and they weren't subscription, it was just getting it off the ground and getting all the databases and things set up. And I was like, they didn't have a huge budget, and I was the once a week, I guess, consulting editor or whatever. I'd come in on Fridays and do press releases, and they were always trying to do features and things around the lot. Of course, back then, before what I call the Viacom divorce, everything was Paramount TV, Paramount Studio was all in the lot.
Right.
There with motion pictures, and where they shot the shows, and people could walk over after work at six or so and do chats. And when I say people, I mean the actors or writers or whoever.
Very cool.
And all that archive of chats. So.
And that was actually up until 2007 when CBS laid off a lot of their interactive department, right? A lot of some 300 layoffs from CBS Interactive. But you've actually come back to StarTrek.com with your Trekland supplemental, right?
Yeah, that's a new thing. I mean, they you know, after the Viacom divorce, as I call it, all the different arms kind of took off. CBS Interactive wound up being back up in Silicon Valley, and licensing is now headquartered in New York with a couple of people out here. And that was where the hiatus, if you will, kind of came from. It's not the same staffing model that they had back then with several full-time, part-time people, but they're taking the baby steps and to get it back running. They're using some of the fan content that's already out there from the sites and having originals. And they've contacted a lot of us about getting things going back again. And so I said, well, I'll call this Trekland supplemental, like Captain's Log supplemental. G.
That's good.
And and I wrote a piece for that. And then I said, well, gee, coming up with these ideas of brilliance is hard enough. And they were like, no, go ahead and, you know, you can do it on yours. You know, have it it's we're doing this cooperative. They're just experimenting with the best way to take the best of original and what's out there and filter it for fans and combine it with the store and some of the old databases and all. The best thing though is that there is a StarTrek.com that's alive and living. Yeah. And not just sitting there looking stagnant from December of 07. So
yeah, that's definitely a good thing. And you know, they've actually opened up a lot of good resources to fan run sites. Which I don't remember, was that on the original StarTrek.com or is this something new?
See, the whole, you know, StarTrek.com originally is the story of the internet and all the twists and turns and up and down. What was the fad? What was the thing here? And for, you know, early on, it was everybody was, you know, the licensed properties anyway. The whole thing, and thankfully this has evolved, of fans and the corporate, you know, or licensed entity. And at first it was this, oh, we want on our fans, but don't you dare support the thing you're a fan of because, you know, don't use too many of our images. Don't use, you know, there's the old story of the daycare nursery school, I think in Iowa, that was they painted like every other one in the country's ever done. They painted their little locally painted Mickey Mouse and Goofy and somehow on the walls and the thing got back to Disney and they sent them a cease and desist letter and the little small town story, news story about it hit AP and went big time. And so nationally people were all saying, wow, what a hard ass Disney is.
Sure.
And then within a week, Warner Brothers sends a letter and says, hi, we're Warner Brothers. Would you like us to send some of our studio paint and put Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck on your wall? And it's like, here's how you handle that situation. You
right.
know, here's how you do the PR. And that. So thankfully the whole thing with, you know, now at the bottom line, and it's the same thing with the fan films too. It's all a thing of, are you making money? You know, now you can be a fan. Here's all the parameters have opened up. And the original StarTrek.com went through, not the guys, but, you know, the legal opinions and some of the corporate stuff they had to deal with were very tight. But as the internet evolved and people saw how marketing and, you know, interactivity, you know, worked out, now everybody's, you know, throwing, let's mention our own stuff and mention our competitors and,
sure,
you know.
It's, yeah, it's the whole social viral, you know, mind scheme. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mind scheme?
Mind scheme. I think you made
I
that
think
up.
I just made that up. Scheme. That's a new
that
word.
That was the best episode until they changed the title.
I'm going to trademark that now.
Yeah.
Mind scheme.
It was like, wasn't it like a fourth season DS9 episode?
Something to do with a lady that was trying to zap Jake's power with her, I don't know. Anyway. Okay, so, you know, a lot of people don't know, but you've, over the years, have collected tons of archival interviews with Trek cast and crew. So is there a plan for you to release that through treklandblog.com?
Well, I'm still trying to figure out what the best way to do that. Yeah, a lot of – when I did the Next Generation Companion, I did so much interviewing, and so little of it got used in the book. And we had moved out here, and I still had access out here. And Janet, my wife, was working on Voyagers in the script department. And, you know, after forging all those relationships with people, you didn't just walk away.
Sure.
And I will say they were hard won because when I first came out, before we moved, I just assumed, oh, I'm a licensed author. Red carpet, here I come. And that's not the case at all. People out here were doing a TV show. And and the parade and the flood of books and merchandise had not yet happened. And it was kind of like, okay, well, I'm sorry. We're busy finishing up our year. People are, you know, crazy. They want to get out of here for their break. I'm like, oh, okay. I learned the hard way. So I went around and basically met everybody on my own and through connections. And that's better than just walking in on the exalted platform of, oh, here's a licensed author coming in, which
sure.
was great. And, yeah. and, you know, in the long run, it served me well. So Mike Westmore and Dan Curry and, you know, Ira Behr and Ron Moore and Michael Piller and all those top, bottom, you know, Herman Zimmerman, all those people, Mike and Denise and, you know, got to know me that way. And it was, for the long term, it was a really good trust issue. And I hopefully was intelligent and hopefully I never screwed anybody and hopefully never did anybody wrong or misquoted or misappropriated or whatever. And then, you know, and then having that closeness, then you see a lot of the soap operas go on too. And, you know, being respectful of the fact that it is a working company, a business, just like anybody else's company has its own ups and downs
sure.
and whatever. So I really appreciated that, and I didn't want to walk away from it. And everybody was good enough over the years, whether I was doing it for a magazine or the years I was editing Communicator, or just the fact that I didn't want to have a gap. And I'd come in and say, hey, I learned very quickly the time to get people was at the end of the year because they're busy as all get out. They're insane during the year, the writers and designers, and then they have that brief little holiday when they get to the end, the season's over, they get to take a breather, but they haven't gone on their vacation yet. And you hit them then, because when they come back, they flush their hard drive. They've got to wipe it out and come in fresh for the new year. And so, yeah, I wound up with tons and tons. Three-fourths of my interviews have not been transcribed even. I've got to get them off cassette tape and digitize them. But I'd like to do that. I mean, a lot of mine were analytical. They weren't so, how does it feel to start season five?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, the fifth season. a lot of mine, and it's come in very handy because I'm still writing like show notes, companion type things for, the last 5 years there's a DVD set that Fact Files is doing in Japan, and they had everything but liner notes, basically. So show notes. So I've been going back to those, which really is making me realize how much the years have gone by now. When I look at the dates of some of these, but so that's been a handy thing for me. But yeah, I don't know, to answer your question finally. I don't know exactly what I'm going to do, but I'd like to do something like that. And some of them need some editing, but
yeah, you know, I can say as a fan that I really appreciate you taking the time to do that kind of stuff. It's cool that there's going to be an archival presence of interviews with not just necessarily actors, but the folks that were actually responsible for makeup and CGI and you know, behind the scenes type stuff.
Right.
That eventually we'll be able to read and listen to, and it'll deepen the experience of us as fans of Star Trek. So that's really cool that you did that.
Well, I'm a fan. That's what I would have done. I'm a fan that has a degree in journalism and in theater, but and God bless them. We all love the cast. That's who sells the tickets to the conventions. That's who makes people watch the shows. Mm-hmm. But I remember, you know, early on, just going up to conventions. We used to go to Steve Walker's. I was in Oklahoma, and we'd go up. The closest decent real Trek con was Steve Walker's conventions in Denver, and he still throws a hell of a one. And to go up and, you know, God bless him, during TNG, you know, Marina and Michael and Jonathan and all those guys, people would ask a makeup question or a set question or a writing question. And they would, you know, make their joke, or they'd do something cute, and everybody would laugh and say, but you know what? That's really a question for Herman Zimmerman. That's really a question for Michael Westmore. That's really a question for Dan Curry. That's really a question for Michael Piller. That's really a question for Ron Moore. And, you know, or writer Ron or effects Ron, whichever one it was.
Right.
And I kept saying, well, then why don't we have them here?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but that's the little tech head in me going, that's the, you know, infamous Tech Con, which had 27 great designers and technicians and got all of 27 people to attend and went broke.
So when was that? When did they have?
I'm kidding. I mean, I'm saying hypothetically.
Sorry, I'm a little slow, so you'll have to excuse me.
That would be the thing. Now, I think the market for it is better now than it used to be because people are savvy.
And you know, there's a lot of people are into creating their own stuff online. Exactly. So having that kind of resource would be cool.
I've noticed that trend. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we're a part of that.
You can do anything. Yeah, there you go. We all are. That you can do anything on your laptop now, where it used to be, you know, oh my gosh, I'm lucky to mimeograph my fanzine.
Right.
You know, and now. But I just remember I had that impetus, and I wanted to know the reason for this happening. You'd watch a show and something would go by, and you just got the sense there was a little inside story there. Or just knowing how the stories evolved, whether you were in writing and in scripting, or just as a, you know, oh wow, you almost did this. And those are those stories leak out in little bits and pieces. Well, you know, now we have DVD bonus features and a lot of that thing comes out. But even then, DVD bonus features still not based with information.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And like the books, like my book and Terry's for DS9 and some of those try to give you that kind of thing too. But even then, there's only so much there's so much I had to leave out of the books. And the Next Generation Companion I did in 3 months, which was then lengthened to 6, the promise was to go back and fill out those early years before I was doing this actively. And when there was such a merry-go-round of staff, especially with the writers, and then it turned into, oh, the business model was such that, no, we really got to leave the pages alone and we'll just concentrate on fleshing it out later.
Right.
You know, the later years. So.
And you did the last update for that in 2003, right?
Yeah, 3 or 4. Right. Well, okay. It was with Nemesis. It was when Nemesis, went down, and the last one before that had been through Generations, and then we let it run until the movies, and then Pocket came in and said, okay, and you know, they're in the driver's seat, okay, we're ready to finish off the book now. Oh, okay. we'll do it. So,
and that's still available for anyone out there who hasn't picked up a copy yet. You can get the Star Trek Next Generation Companion at Amazon, right? It's available
you
through
can.
Amazon.
Yeah. In fact, if you come to LarryNemechek.com and take the link, it's a real shortcut, easy way to find it.
No, that's good.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody should do that.
Indeed.
Yeah, or that some of the DVDs and things are there too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So you you mentioned Star Trek Communicator. You're back doing segments on in Star Trek Magazine, is that correct? The Fistful of Data?
Yeah, in fact, the funny thing is Star Trek Magazine, which I still call the Titan Magazine, because for years that was the UK magazine and they did a monthly. And I wrote that column. I did a Q&A column for them and they called it Fistful of Data. They're being cute. the Q&A thing way before the internet took over and way before everything else. But no one in the States saw it. It's like the fact files. I've done tons of work. You know, people think, oh, you wrote this book and you did Communicator. But I've been doing for years things that the rest of the world has seen that Americans haven't necessarily. But
right.
Anyway, I've been with them since 96, 97. I used to write an upcoming show column or show notes. And then I went into the Q&A. And then at one point, the current editor wanted to break it out on its own. So now it's grown to three or four. Because I've worked the archives at CBS so many years that, pull out things that are rare or behind the scenes. Started off being blooper pictures.
Gotcha.
And then it's turned into things that just never got published, really, that I'm pretty sure have never been. And if they have been, they're so obscure that the vast majority of fans have never seen them. So that's what Lost and Found is. And then I have the show notes. I get into my call sheets and archive and talk about when it was filmed and what was going on and try to do some context and have it be more than just, oh, here's a rare picture, or here's two guys, here's these guys goofing off on set.
Right. For us though, that stuff's kind of invaluable since the show's not being made anymore. It gives us the opportunity to go back and kind of re-explore the episodes from a different perspective. So
yeah, and that's one thing I've had to get over. I was cleaning out some stuff in the garage and it suddenly hit me. Well, here's an example. When The Experience closed, and I worked on, there were lots of people that were contractors that worked at the beginning, and I was privileged enough to write all the museum cards for the original museum area. And then when they did the update after Enterprise premiered on the timeline, they wanted some of the Archer era stuff filled in. I did a couple of the new panels that went in, but helped dress it up when it came up. But had a hand in, and I'm very proud of the museum cards. But then when it ended, it was sad and the years went by. And it wasn't until like that cast of actors up there that had done those characters and woven their own story that wasn't even planned to be and came up with all this subtext and context and background and the regular fans of The Experience that loved it and miss it now. There are, now we've had the auction of the pieces that got all this attention in the middle of auction era here where so much stuff is going out. But it's almost like The Experience was like the sixth series or something. It's almost
right.
Like, mm-hmm. If it's original The Experience or something from that era, it's almost, and I'm not equating it with all the films and movies, but there's a lot of emotional, sentimental attachment to it and reverence for that.
And I think we just lost him.
Hey.
Hey, yeah, love the internet.
Woohoo.
Sorry about that.
No,
and then
okay.
I couldn't. My screen had blanked, and I had to wait for it to pop back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, stupid technology. if we could just say, computer, call Larry, it'd be so much easier.
It would be easier, wouldn't it?
And so much cooler. Yeah,
yeah, seriously, yeah.
But then you'd have to say, computer, magnify and enhance. No, not the image, me.
That's good. So where were we? Let's see here. So maybe we should... Let's talk about your start in Star Trek. You started off doing, did you call them funzines or fanzines?
Fan is a fun, I don't know, maybe somebody else calls something a funzine, but a fanzine was basically, fanzine is the old fandom.
Right.
And not just sci-fi, but like, music, rock music and everything, name for an amateur produced magazine, a fans magazine.
Right.
And as opposed to a prozine or a professional magazine. So,
and that was called the Star Trek The Next Generation Concordance and Episode Guide, right?
Yeah, or TNG for short. And I didn't, invent it. I'd always been a fan of, when I was coming along, Stephen Poe's book, Making Star Trek, Bijou Trimble's Concordance, And then later on, Franz Joseph Schnabelt, not many people know his real last name, did the tech manual, the Enterprise blueprints, and then bang, you know, a whole new, I mean, that was pioneering, and a whole new thing, a whole new fandom was born. What is this thing called pop culture fandom? And when the tech manual was on the New York Times bestseller list for, I don't know, number one for 16 weeks, I think that was, I think that has as much to do as Star Wars did and people thinking, oh, maybe this, there's some money still in this Star Trek thing after all. Because that was kind of eye-opening. But anyway, I patterned when Next Generation came back. I had loved the Concordance and loved how Bijou did it. Had my own twist on some things, but I thought, I'll do this. And at the same time, desktop publishing was a new concept, and I wanted to get a Mac and do all this stuff and have a laser printer. And oh, my God, it looks like a real printing press. and so jumped in and found I wanted something to do. I mean, I read the stories about Bijou doing all her Concordance writing on index cards, and I started off that way. And then on my on a Mac, someone showed me FileMaker, very early version of FileMaker, and I could set up my own database. And I still have those files today that just they just grow and have gone through the versions; they just update. But
that's awesome.
I've used that same thing for all the shows. I haven't got all the later shows finished out like I did the earlier ones. But so yeah, so that's where that came from. I even figured it where I could output the pages totally, you know, using Word and so that was a hot thing. And I used to just make up a batch of 50 and sell them at our local cons. And then I had a, I forget now how I did it, but I had a mailing list of about 50, 60 people around the country. And they, every year they would send me a SACE. There's a trivia question. Do you guys know what a SACE is?
No, I don't.
It's an acronym, SASE, self-addressed stamped envelope.
Oh, wow. See, I told you, slow.
No, that's okay. It's still around, I think, but right. That was the river of life of fandom there for a while. I mean, for a lot of things. But or you'd read a magazine ad, send 25 cents in coin in a self-addressed stamped envelope.
I do remember that, yeah. I remember sending off for, gosh, I want to say the Charles Atlas fitness thing in the back of my boy's life. So.
Yeah, there you go. kick sand in your face. But
right.
the Well Committee, before the internet, the Star Trek Well Committee was the brainchild of several women. That's the other thing that's so funny. Ever since the William Shatner skit on Saturday Night Live, the stereotype of fans has been the nerdy pizza face boy, you know, in the t-shirt living in his parents' basement. Fandom was really, thanks to Spock and the Vulcan mystique and all that, there was always the kind of the male tech element, but that was always the minority to the women. If you go back and not to do a tangent here, but women were, especially middle-aged women and 20s and 30s young women, all the original leaders of the conventions and the fans and the zines and all that stuff were all women. So that's just a tangent. But anyway, so yeah, my thing was based on Bijou's. I said so in the beginning. I put my own tweaks to it, my concordance and zine. And thanks to Richard Arnold, a couple other people, they got back to the writers who had no idea anything like this existed because they were all desperately trying to keep up their show notes from show to show because the Bible is great for the pilot. And then after that, you're evolving a show. So, and of course, now the wikis do all that work for the writers online.
Right.
But at the time, there wasn't that. So all the writers knew was that once a year, they'd get this book copied 10 or 12 times that would just come out of manna from heaven. Somebody did it. And the first time or two I came over and got to visit and got tours. I'd get, you know, they'd say, and this is Larry Nemechek from Oklahoma. And they go, oh, yeah, sure, huh? And they go, he's the guy that does our writer's concordance every year. Oh!
Yeah, I bet they love that.
Or the assistants especially would go, oh, because you saved my ass with my boss. So.
Sure. Sure. And then
I don't have to go dig through scripts because I've got it in your, you know, book. So.
Right. And that, that actually became very, you know, I mean, that was their thing, right? I mean, they loved that. And that's kind of what led you into meeting Gene Roddenberry for the first time, or was it the first time?
It was the first and only time I got to meet Gene, and it's how naive and young I was, because when they said no cameras on the lot, I didn't take a camera on the lot. I didn't know that that meant stick it away. And then when you went inside an office, then you whipped it out, you know. So I don't have a picture of Gene and myself together. But the one time we did meet was he thanked me for the first two or three years of doing those. And of course, I was like, well, Gene, it's just, you know, my best little respectful, trying not to turn into a puddle nerd boy thing here when I was, you know, well, it's, I'm just giving back to everything you've given, you know, people. So, but that was a nice little moment. No, you know, no audio or video exists at the moment, but,
No, that's
it's
cool.
It's in my mind's eye anyway.
Sure. So. And you know, there's so few people out there that could say that they had that experience with Gene. So yeah, I'm sure that's amazingly special to you as a fan.
It is. It's just that everybody I tend to work with out here all do have their pictures with Gene. So.
Oh, bummer.
Oh, I know. Nope, somehow we get that's where the magic of Photoshop comes in.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Someday I'll, yeah.
And so you actually you wrote an episode of Voyager. It started off being called Reflections. Now you wrote that that's right, Reflections. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, it actually had several names. Okay. And I do want to say that my wife Janet and I pitched it together, and it was also the of all the pitches we worked on overall, both shows of Voyager and DS9 by that time. That was probably the most blow-off pitch, because we said, oh, well, Delta Quadrant, B'Elanna, you got a half Klingon on there, so we, okay, generational ship of Klingons, they come across it, and they go back 100 years, so they're Kirk-era Klingons, and they don't know about the peace and detente, and B'Elanna, you know, they it's either a full-scale war, or they're old-style Klingons that are taking a colony hostage, or but B'Elanna was the focal, we went through several iterations of it, even after we pitched it and they bought it, but B'Elanna was the focal point, and she hated her Klingon half, and then, you know, Janeway tells her to do it anyway, and then she falls for one of the people, and then she winds up having to pick between her, and then she finds out she was used and, you know, betrayed, and then she comes down to, at the end, she either had to, we went back and forth between Chakotay or Paris, who she'd have to, she's either going to have to shoot the Klingon or shoot one of them, and it was really funny, because we pitched that, and we were like, yeah, that's like the token thing, because everyone will be doing this, and then, of course, that's the one they bought, instead of more elaborately staged out things, and I'll always appreciate Jerry for doing that, and Michael for doing that, rest his soul, and we pitched many, many more that all have pieces that somehow wound up in, especially on the DS9 side. But that's par for the course. That's what happens.
Sure.
And, and then it went into the, and then it got pushed back because they did B'Elanna shows and they did Klingon shows. And after 4 years, we thought, well, we got paid for it, but you know, we'll never get seen. It'll never get seen. It's on the pile. And then the last year, the seventh season, when they had gone, you know, they went from Jerry to Brannon to, and Ken Biller ran the show the last year, pulled it out of the pile. He was looking at everything they had bought that had never been fully developed. And he remembered back from first season, the story meeting we had when Michael Piller said, oh, why don't we put this on a planet and have subtitles with the language and have old style Klingons. And they've taken a planet hostage. And it's like original series type Klingons with a subjected colony. And we were like, oh, we were trying to do a bottle show, but okay. It's your show, guys, whatever. And, anyway, Ken remembered that, pulled it out, and of course it had to be updated because by then she was married and pregnant and everything.
Right.
And so the gist of it was the generational Klingons and the intrigue and her as the focal point. But they were good enough to keep us on it. And the teaser and part of the first act is from our original story. Awesome. But again, six years went by and they had to update it. So it couldn't just totally be that way. But Janet will to this day say that our story was still more exciting than the first.
Yeah, and for folks that don't know, it ended up being Prophecy, season 7. Wasn't sure if you gave the title there. Yeah, if you haven't seen it, definitely watch it. I know a lot of Star Trek fans. Out of all the series, it seems Voyager's probably the one that people have watched the least, at least from the fans that I've talked to, which is a shame.
Who do you talk?
No. Yeah. Seriously, right? Yeah, so it which is a shame because Voyager has amazing episodes, Prophecy being one of them. So if you guys haven't seen it, which I'm sure you have, go out and watch it. So
yeah, good. And kudos to Mike Sussman and Raph Green and everybody else that's on the writing credits there too. Unfortunately, they spent a ton of money on that show and then had to cut it. If you ever catch my one of the slideshows I do or the PowerPoints now we do at conventions is some of the cut scenes from that. They spent a ton of money in the teaser and set up the story much better, and they had to cut it for time. And there's a funeral of the Klingon, old Klingon ship captain has just died, and they have a whole Klingon funeral and the, you know, yelling to Stovokor or the whole thing. And now it just opens with Voyager finding that ship. And
that's a
that
shame.
That's
a real shame.
There's pictures of it, but and the script pages, but that's all we have out front.
Yeah,
so
that's a bummer because I love it when they start diving deeper into Klingon culture. You know, that's just for me. That's just something that I dig. It's a shame it's been cut out. So you mentioned that you do the PowerPoints at conventions.
Well, that was Yeah, I started off talking about how I wrote the companion book, and I figured out real. I had been around conventions for a long time. We used to work on our local ones in Oklahoma City, the charity fan cons, and then I started a convention called ThunderCon to be more media oriented, and not a lit con. And I modeled it after I was giving kudos to Steve Walker's con in Denver.
And that's Starfest, then, right?
Starfest, okay. Right? And then we moved to LA and were able to talk to some, especially on Voyager, but on both shows, talk to some of the actors and be a trustable face, because a lot of it in those days was so many cons were coming and going and people promised stuff and they're half stranded somewhere in the Midwest because people got show business, they got all starry-eyed and didn't apply a business sense or common sense to running things. So a lot of the fan cons used to be. So anyway, that we kind of shepherded people back and forth, and it ran about 8 years. But yeah, I had a background in that as well, and I like to think a foot in both worlds. That should be an episode title.
Either foot that or mind scheme.
Yeah, mind scheme. Well, right. A foot in both worlds would be a prize. And mind scheme is definitely DS9. The unseen eighth season.
Right.
No, the professional side and then the fan side of whatever it is, whether it's producing an event or writing or publishing or whatever. But so I like to think I bring anything I'm doing, I bring all that to it.
Absolutely. And do you have any conventions that are coming up that you want to promote?
Oh yeah. I'm not presenting. I'm not doing a panel per se. What I've been doing lately until I have a couple of things hopefully on the horizon that are going to happen. But right now I've mainly been concentrating on promoting Trekland and promoting the site, and I need to get geared up to do that again. But I always go to Vegas and do a couple of things for the show. I've been going to Comic-Con down in San Diego, and my friend Daryl Frazetti, I mentioned, has been getting me out to some of the more Comic-Con oriented conventions that seem to be expanding a little because Comic-Con itself has gotten so famous and so huge. The one in Seattle is called Emerald City Comic-Con, and then Comic-Con's sister convention, WonderCon in San Francisco. Some of the others. But anyway, all that to say that I'm going to be at New York's Comic-Con in October. And of course, I'm sitting here without the dates handy. I think it's like the 8th, 9th, 10th, 9th, 10th, 11th of October in New York City. Not presenting, but I'll have a table. And people, if for some reason you're at a hardcore New York Comic-Con and you feel the need to go talk Star Trek, come look me up.
And we'll look up the date and add it to the end of the show.
I'm finding it here. My publicist is letting me down. Yeah, it's 8th, 9th, 10th.
Okay, good.
And then the weekend after that back here in Hollywood is a new convention. A veteran promoter and producer, Doug Conway, Sky Conway. But a thing called Hollywood Expo, which is not just Trek. It's several genres. And I'm going to be doing some of my old style presentations there and have a table and lots of fans going on there. That may be about it for the year.
We actually wanted to come out to Hollywood. We just can't seem to pull it together, but looks like it should be a really good show. Lots of Trek stars are showing up. Not only that, but like you said, the different genres. It seems like he's gotten just about, not, I shouldn't say everyone, but lots of folks.
I noticed that. He's been adding a few people lately. I've got Stan Lee on one day, mm-hmm. and of course Stan Lee's is New York based, so I don't know. He's must be coming out to film another Big Bang Theory or something. Maybe, who knows? But that's just a rumor. I'm not spreading it. I have no idea. He's been adding some people and rounding out the guest list and some of the other series. Of course, when you're in LA, it's easy. It's easy to do that. You don't have to pay anybody transportation. You just
And it,
you just have them drive over.
A lot of the folks, a lot of the clan from the Vegas Con, Starfleet Mom and Trek Guy 62, and a few other folks are going out there. So you'll probably see a lot of familiar faces from the Vegas Con.
Oh no!
Yeah. Not to drop any names, but the Twitter folks are going to be showing up. So.
Oh, the Twitterati. Yeah. Okay. There we go.
That's a perfect name.
And it was, and I should say, it was great to meet you guys this year.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Keep this to inside baseball, yeah. But
we loved it.
What you're doing with the site and with the podcasting, everything is great, and it was great to hang. And our little throw together meet up the trivia thing we did was surprisingly fun for as much effort as we put into it. We planned to do. even a bigger production, and it seemed like everybody had a good time with the way it turned out.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I know that that you guys have been talking about it on Twitter. We actually have a video on our YouTube channel of the very last question from that trivia contest, if you guys
saw that. Yes, Televixen was Mary was talking about it, and I said, well, it's because that was Saturday night and my voice was totally shot, so I let her do all the talking.
Yeah. Yep. So if you guys want to see that, you can check it out on our YouTube channel, youtube.com. Let me start that over, youtube.com/subspacecoms. So, but yeah, no, I really appreciate you taking the time to kind of hang out with us, answer some of our questions, listen to our ridiculous banter. But it's really cool to talk to you again, and we thank you.
Well, I'll listen to your ridiculous banner if you listen to mine.
Perfect.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll make up words, and yeah, so that's good. That's really good.
No, well, thanks for having me on. And like I said, right, I've got some things coming up. I have a project I'm going to work on that should have been announced by now. It's holding on, but I hope to be doing that in a couple of months. And then I have something of my own that's kind of striking out into new ground for me, but something I want to do for a long time. I just, hopefully by the first next year, I'll be able to say something more about that. Awesome. And I'll say that it won't be on the written page.
Oh, cool.
Ooh.
So,
and once you release that, ping us, we'll throw it up on the site for sure. One thing we do want to close with, my lovely co-host just reminded me, we like to end the episode by asking one of the more common questions, and actually Manu said last time that it's not a common question at conventions.
But, oh, no.
Yeah, what's your favorite episode from Star Trek? And
okay.
I know that kind of puts you on the spot because there's a lot of series, but...
No, well, see, I just say, I don't know how people have favorite episodes from different series. The good old one was, and the one that used to get by on for, 20 years was... You just automatically meant original series because there wasn't anything
right.
else.
Yeah,
and I can spit that at you, right off the bat. It's a tie between Doomsday Machine and Journey to Babel.
Good call. Mm-hmm. That's good stuff.
Although I can tell you my top five, top 10. My underappreciated original series episode is Friday's Child.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I'll just leave you with that. Discuss.
Perfect. I was afraid you were going to say The Way to Eden. So.
No, okay, no. Cool. Hey out there. No, we reach, Chris, but not that much.
Oh, that's gold.
And all the rest of the series, Next Generation, I have to say, somewhere, but I follow everybody else. I'd say either Yesterday's Enterprise or Best of Both Worlds. I remember Yesterday's Enterprise knocked me off my chair as the turning point
right.
episode
yeah.
of the series.
Yep.
I mean, and that's the one thing, and I've thought of this in context of like the European or the foreign fans. Star Trek to them, when they come to it, is this big wall of DVDs.
Right.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like, oh, and everything is just, unless they were lucky enough to get drips and drabs. If you were American and if you were in the, if you were a fan for a long time and you have a sense of there's the, you know how they evolved. You know what the downtimes, the hiatuses were. You remember the cliffhangers and waiting over summers and you remember the ups and downs and the dog episodes and the really good ones and waiting for things that you remember enduring second season Enterprise till the fourth one came along,
right.
You remembered watching, praying for Next Generation to get better after the first couple of seasons
right.
and seeing the little moments of stuff and then finally bang, have it. When Michael came in on third season and they were able to pull it together and have a vision, have a vision take off there. So the foreign fans and people who are new from wherever they are coming in, they just know this wall of boxes, and it's all the same to them. And that's the one thing I regret, that people don't have that, living with it, which is going to happen. I mean, eventually we'll all die off and that's the way of the world.
Sure.
Is everything
yeah.
is known by, Shakespeare or whatever is, Sherlock Holmes, whatever it was, old time radio, was known by people to see as a catalog list or whatever. So I don't know. That's another part of the context. It's fun to bring to all these things is reminding people. I guess that's kind of what I do with the Lost and Found, is kind of take you back and plop you back down in that time and make you remember, or help you remember what it was like or what was going on. But I don't know why I got off on that tangent, but I for some reason it seemed important to say. But
no, we love the tangents.
That's, oh yeah,
everybody loves to listen to the tangents. So
uh-huh.
we're burning up valuable digital space.
Right? Yeah, the bits and bytes are flying by. Yeah. Yeah. So again, thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris, and best of luck. And just everybody come over, and hopefully we'll take off, and I'll let you know when some of the other things are coming. If you're in Japan, though, boy, keep reading your DVD, three DVD set weekly issues of the Fact Files, because you have a lot of Japanese listeners, right?
Yes, yeah. We're big in Japan, so. And everybody out there, go to treklandblog.com. Larry also has a Twitter account. Twitter.com/LarryNemechek.
Yes.
And your Facebook page, is that also Trekland or Facebook.com/Trekland?
My Facebook page is Larry Nemechek's Trekland.
Okay, there you go. So everybody go out there, like everything and follow and do all the thing that you crazy kids do with your social media. So
yeah.
So perfect.
I want to see the anti-social media come on.
Yeah, me too. I think I'd probably be a part of that.
Yeah, you have to keep them separate, though. You know why, right?
Why is that? Oh, because anti and – okay.
You can't mix social media and anti-social media cold. Yeah. You've got to have 30 minutes. But okay. Sorry.
That's good. That's perfect. That's good.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Well, on that note.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks for having me.
Definitely. So that's episode 2 of Life After Trek. We hope you guys enjoyed it as much as we did. We'd like to give a big thanks to Larry Nemechek for joining us on the podcast. If you have the chance, be sure to check out Larry's website. It's treklandblog.com. There you'll be able to read all kinds of really cool articles that Larry has written, including interviews with like the one we mentioned with Jeffrey Combs and lots of other great stuff that kind of gives you a really good inside look into Star Trek. If you've never been to our site before, it's subspacecommunicate.com. We are also on Twitter. That's twitter.com/subspacecoms. Also with Facebook, facebook.com/subspacecoms. Thanks again for listening to our show, and until next time, live long and prosper.